Wasn't it the band Rainbow that gave you the first chance to be heard on an international level? And how did that take place? Well, I was in a band called Elf before Rainbow. That band was produced by Roger Glover, who was the bass player then in Deep Purple, as well as Yet Again. And through my affiliation with Roger, I got to meet the people in the band Deep Purple and then go out on the road with them for about 8 tours of the world. And when Ritchie Blackmore decided that he was going to go away from Purple, I guess after hearing me night after night after night, decided that I might be a good person to put the band together with because of my writing, I assume, and singing, hopefully. So I agreed to do that. I thought it was an excellent idea because Ritchie Blackmore was one of my idols, and what a great opportunity. What really happened was that our guitar player left and the rest of Elf played on the first album. So it was all the people in Elf and Ritchie just doing the work on that first album. Subsequently, we decided to replace all of those people. First with Jimmy Bain, who is now the bass player in Dio, of course. With Cozy Powell, a great drummer. With Tony Carey, who was the keyboard player. We carried on. That was the first touring Rainbow. And that band went on to do Rainbow Rising, the second Rainbow album, as well as the third Rainbow album, which was a live one called Rainbow Live on Stage. A few more changes after that. Bob Daisley as a bass player, David Stone as the keyboard player. And then at the end of all that, it was my turn to go away and look for greener pastures, I guess. We parted friends, Ritchie and I. He's always been a gentleman to me. Hopefully I've been the same to him. And that was the end of Rainbow. Not really the end, because it was, for me, the beginning. And again, it was Ritchie and that band that gave me the first opportunity to be heard on a really worldwide level.
Mia, Ronnie James Dio has been quiet since he was diagnosed late last year. He's 67 years old with a very tough guy persona on stage many of you may know about. That toughness is coming in handy now.
Best people, I mean, the staff are just so wonderful. They just are the best people, as you can see.
This is the Ronnie James Dio few people have ever seen. He's a bit soft-spoken.
Following this one, there's one definite more chemo procedure.
He's relaxed.
I just want to get better. I just want to be cured, you know.
Because if you've ever seen or heard Dio over the past 50 years or so, this is the sound you remember. He's been the front man in groups like Black Sabbath. Currently, he's the lead vocalist for his group, Dio. an iconic sound in heavy metal, who's made the devil's horn hand gesture part of the culture. Today, those hands get support from his wife, Wendy, and nurses and doctors. Dio has stomach cancer.
You know, I've been poked and prodded in holes I didn't know I had before, and they probably made a few new ones that I don't even know where they are. I'm lucky that I am a very, you know, hard person and strong within my beliefs, so that this hasn't really been a problem for me. You know, I just look at cancer, I'll kick the hell out of you. Yet.
It was right after Halloween, and Dio says he started feeling chest pains. He thought it was acid indigestion that just would go away. But soon came the diagnosis, and now comes the trips. Here to MD Anderson Cancer Center every 2 weeks for chemotherapy.
This hospital is the best in the world. Wendy did a lot of research in hospitals.
Ronnie's a very feisty person, and he doesn't take, he's taken it very much in his stride. You know, obviously we were a little despondent in the beginning, but now he's just ready to kick it. That's all he wants to do is kick it and get on with his life.
Getting on with his life means flying in from LA, going through the chemo, and then flying back home. Sometimes band members like bass player Geezer Butler comes for support.
Geezer said, I want to go through what Ronnie's going through. I want to be here for that.
But Wendy Dio is always with him. The treatment seems to be working. She says the tumor in his stomach is getting smaller. All of this in a man with a very big voice. You can call it heavy metal or rock and roll, though Dio calls this experience something to roll with.
I refuse to be beaten in any way, shape, or form, so I'm going to beat this too.
And we wish him the best of luck. Dio hopes the chemo can be stopped next month, and then he hopes to do what he does best, and that's go back on tour. We'll keep you posted on his condition. Steve Simon, 3090.
never ever had any plans to be a, quote, solo artist, unquote. And to this point, never think of myself as that. Dio was a band, of course, that came out of a lot of frustration, having been in some bands that, you know, I'd been released from, or whatever the nice word is that makes us, our egos feel a little bit better, but, you know, booted out was, you know, what happens? It happens to everyone. And you either can deal with that or you can't deal with that. The first time it happened, mainly in the Rainbow days, didn't make me immediately want to get, you know, to have my own band, but I did consider it. And in fact, I did work with a few musicians that were in Elf before, once again with Mickey Lee Sewell, with Mark Nosseef, and Craig Gruber, as a matter of fact. And we were going to put a band together because there was an interim between Rainbow and the next band I was in, which was Black Sabbath. So when the Sabbath invitation came about, which initially started only as Tony and I going to put a band together. It had nothing to do with Black Sabbath at all. Tony was going to leave the band. He wasn't happy with them at all. Through a mutual friend, I was living in Connecticut at the time because that's where we went with Rainbow to live. That's where Richie wanted to live. So we moved from California back to the East Coast again. At that point, I stayed there after my time in Rainbow was up because I really had nowhere else to go and didn't know what else to do. But it was a very difficult situation in New York. I wasn't really part of the New York City scene, didn't want to be part of that scene. And all the musicians that I knew who were playing the kind of music I wanted to play were back in Los Angeles. But we stayed there. And during that time, as I say, a mutual friend who lived in California called and said that she had talked to Tony Iommi at the Rainbow one night, famous Rainbow Bar and Grill, and he wanted to know if he could get my telephone number. So she called me, and I said, yeah, sure. So Tony called, and he told me, as I mentioned to you, that he was going to leave the band and form something else, and he knew I was not in Rainbow anymore, and he liked all the things that I'd done, and would I be interested in doing something with him. So we actually started on, yeah, let's do that. He said, do you have any musicians in mind? And I said, well, you know, I have a drummer. And he said, well, you know, I really want to use Bill, because he had played with Bill all of his life, of course. And I said, that's fine with me. I said, you know, I said, there are other players. We can deal with it. So we talked for a while, for a period of 3 or 4 months. And then the conversation stopped, because they were then at that point offered, it was going to be their 10th anniversary, and they were going to do a big reunion tour. They had had a couple albums before that particular point that were not very successful. So it was a very down time for them. So, as I say, everything stopped. Money is a great deterrent for putting musicians together. Eventually, I moved back to California again. And lo and behold, one night, saw Tony in the Rainbow, who was a bit sheepish about it all and sent someone over to say, oh, do you think he'd maybe say hello to me? And so I did, of course, and from there, I was invited to where they were rehearsing, and then the rest became what it became with Sabbath. So I went into a situation where leaving even was more hurtful than the first time. And after that, I think after both of those boots up the arse, that's when I decided that I better take control of my own life. I think I know what I want. I think I paid enough dues, and I this will give me a chance to choose the people that I want to play with and make the kind of music that I want to make without having any outside interference. So at that point, that's what happened. But it wasn't this massive heap on my shoulders that said, do it yourself, boy. You can do it. Not at all. It took a while because I never had that solo attitude. And when I did put Dio together, it never was a solo project to me. It had my name on it, which I thought was clever from a business standpoint. After all, coming out of Sabbath, people knew who I was, and Rainbow. And so what better connection for some kind of instant recognition than to call the band Dio? So, of course, everyone thought, well, Mr. Ego's done it again. He's called the band after himself because he controls everything and, you know, he just hires people and away he goes. But that's not what happened. At that point, that's when we started the search for the musicians to make the Holy Diver album what it was.
Letting the rain sail away on ships of wonder. But life's not a wheel with chains made of steel. So bless me, oh bless me, bless me. Come the dawn, come the dawn, come the dawn, come the dawn.
In the early 70s, British hard rock bands such as Sabbath, Deep Purple and Led Zeppelin were conquering America. Their sound influenced countless American bands. One of these was Elf, formed by Ronnie James Dio, who was later to play a crucial role in the Black Sabbath story. Elf had started out being called the Electric Elves.
Electric Elves became a name that was a little bit passé. You know, all the electric thing, there were the electric prunes and the electric thises and the electric thats, and so we were electric when the, you know, when the time was right. And then, of course, electric became stupid, so we just became Elf, which made sense because we were all in a band. We were all real small, tiny. My cousin was only barely 5 feet tall. I'm like 5'4" and a half, 5'5". Piano player was about the same size as me, drummer the same size as me. So we were really tiny. We were actually advertised as being green in color and having pointed ears. I mean, some pretty stupid people around in those days. But we would come out and they wouldn't know what to make of us. Out came these little tiny people, and we got a lot of laughter at that until we started. And then it was just, we just bludgeoned people to death with our level of power. You know, we were wanting to be heavy. I mean, Purple were our influences, and Zeppelin, and, you know, heavy people.
In 1975, Ronnie Dio, then in Elf, was approached by ex-Deep Purple guitarist Ritchie Blackmore to join his new band, Rainbow. This posed a dilemma for Ronnie, whether to leave his friends in Elf or not.
I had these guys that I grew up with, they were my best friends on earth, and I wasn't about to let them die and suffer without me just for the sake of bettering myself. So eventually I went to Ritchie and said, I'll do it if you'll take all the guys in my band. And without the guitar player, of course, because it seemed that Ritchie played pretty well, so I let him play. And he said, okay.
After only one album, Ritchie wanted to change the lineup, getting rid of the old Elf members.
Well, see, he actually played with Elf on the first album. It was just Elf and You, and he hated that. He really hated it. Which is probably one of the reasons why a lot of the people were gone after that, you know, to get rid of that Elf stigma. I'm the one who had to tell them all. So it was a very personal thing for me. Ritchie is the person who tends to let other people do his work for him, whether it's dirty work or clean work. And so he allowed me, he kind of forced me to have to do that. It was very hurtful for me. These were my best friends, guys I grew up with, you know, from little kids, and our dreams were my dreams were their dreams were my dreams. So it was very hard to puncture that.
Back in Rainbow, Ronnie Dio had stayed for three albums and several lineup changes, but in the end, he and Ritchie Blackmore fell out.
Obviously, two very strong characters, and I think something was inevitably bound to give. I think Ronnie wanted to do his own, instead of being part of Ritchie's band, I think Ronnie wanted to have his own band and wanted to be the focus of attention. So I think inevitably there was going to be a problem at some point.
I was asked to start writing love songs and poppy things, and I don't do that. And I refused to do that, so bye. That was it. Clean and simple. Nice, clean break. See ya. Your elbow, too. Your turf. See ya, mate. And then that was me. You know, I was gone. I mean, it was Ritchie's band, and he had the right to do whatever he wanted to do. So he got someone else in who was willing to wear what he wanted to wear.
Ronnie wasn't out of work for long. With Ozzy gone, Sabbath needed a new singer.
I spoke to him on the phone, and I met him over at Don Arden's house at the party. We spoke about things. And so I said, want to come over and have a play with us and see how we get on?
You know, my first opportunity to meet Tony in the flesh and Geezer and Bill. And we got along really well, went out into the rehearsal room, and Tony showed me something, and we wrote a song called Children of the Sea that night. In the misty
morning. We liked his voice, and we liked the way things were happening. We were managing to be able to start writing material again. And it was happening quick, so that was the bottom line. We wanted to make an album. We had to carry on.
The band felt that Ronnie had brought a new lease of life to Sabbath.
I loved the stuff that Sabbath were doing then. It really inspired me again. I really got into it. And I realised it was the right move. You know, one of us had to go, and unfortunately, it had to be Ozzy.
Ozzy especially. Has, you know, real staunch fans. And for someone else to come into Sabbath, I mean, God, that was sacrilegious to these people. So, you know, in the early days, there was a little bit of, you know, finger-throwing at concerts and, you know, signs being chucked up that, you know, were less than flattering to me, but that didn't matter to me. I don't care. You say what you want to say. I'm on the stage. You're not.
In Sabbath, the lineup of Tony and Geezer with Ronnie Dio and Vinnie Appice lasted for two albums before trouble arose. The problem centered around mixing a live album.
The engineer who was doing the product was drinking a lot, and he would tell Tony and Geezer that Vinnie and I were going into the studio and turning up the drums and the vocals.
We were going the next day and go, what the hell's happened to the guitar and bass? And the engineer go, well, Ronnie changed it all. He brought all the vocals up more. And
the engineer was drinking more. You see him deteriorate over the period of this album, you know, because he was trying to keep everything, trying to keep the peace, really.
So something was up, whether the engineer was a nutter and doing it himself or what, because Ronnie denied it.
I couldn't understand why they would listen to it who an idiot who was drinking a bottle of Jack Daniels every day. You know, it made no sense to me.
So he came next, we banned Ronnie from the studio. Wouldn't let him come in, you see, and that's, of course, that was the final straw. It just broke up.
Ronnie Dio, having left Sabbath back in 1983, had formed a band in his own image. It was called Dio.
I could finally be, you know, the leader that I was all these times anyway, but I didn't have to buffer that being a leader by patting people on the back and saying, oh, yesterday, no, sir, three bags full, you're wonderful today. Didn't have to do that anymore.
This band was a new thing. Didn't have to play in anybody's shoes. You know, whatever I wanted to do, the door was open to do it.
My attitude has always been, a band has to be a democracy with a dictator. It has to be. If you can let it be democratic so people are getting their say in, then you're using the best of what they have to contribute as people, as musicians. But someone at the end of the day has to say yes or no. If not, well, what do you think? Well, I don't know. Well, then you become an I don't know band, and I don't know bands go nowhere.
Despite having his own band, when Ronnie got the call to rejoin Sabbath, he decided to get back together with the group. He was reunited with Cozy Powell, but relationships were strained from the beginning.
We went to the States to do some rehearsals, and it didn't particularly gel the first couple of months. The chemistry wasn't quite right, for whatever reason.
Again, the communication problem came up again. We didn't really communicate. So when any problems did come up, you know, it was a matter of people hiding behind doors and, you know, hearing it from other people. This is wrong. That's a problem. Well, was anybody going to tell us all about this? Are we going to talk about it as people? No, we never did.
I came back to England and went down to a horse show just near where I live, and I had a horse promptly fall on top of me, breaking my pelvis, and that was me out of the band.
And that's when we got Vinnie back to do it, and once Vinnie was back, Ronnie felt comfortable, so then he was started being able to write, you know, come up with ideas then. But it was still pulling teeth doing that album.
Midway through the tour that followed recording the album, the band were invited to play with Ozzy Osbourne at one of his solo concerts. It was an offer Ronnie wasn't about to take up.
I especially gave up too much of what I had with the Dio band to suddenly be relegated to being the opening act for the ex-lead singer, again, who had nothing but bad things to say, certainly about me, but about Tony as well, and Geezer. So, just wasn't in the cards. I wasn't going to be on the same stage with the man.
We'd like to do something for you now from our second LP called Rainbow Rising. So, just a small story about a wizard, a man who takes people and makes slaves of them. Has him build a huge tower to the sky, to a star. And because he's always looking at the star and for the star, we call him, as Tony Curry will tell you, anyone else will tell you, Stargazers!
Thank you. Yeah.